kick for Atleti. Good opportunity to give a shout to a blog, a US fan club of Atletico Madrid called Into the Calderon. Do some really good content for all followers of the Colchoneros. A decent base in the United States as well, following the action on ESPN Plus. Give them a follow at Into the Calderon.
Edition of Colchonero Chat. I'm Jeremy Barron of Into the Calderon, joined by another first-time guest on this Tuesday evening show, Sam Leverage, whose work can be found at Marca in English, our frenemies at Managing Madrid, but also on our site, Into the Calderon. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Jeremy. Good to be here. I'm representing the good guys, not the dark side of the frenemies, as you call them.
That's right.
So, yeah, good to be here.
We are the side of light and goodness and everything right with the world.
Exactly.
Well, Sam, I'm surprised it's taken us this long to do this, but this is your first time on the program, and we have a bunch of stuff to talk about today. We will be discussing in some detail the Barca game at the weekend, Atleti's 1-0 home loss to Barcelona at the Metropolitano, which you attended. So we're going to have a nice chat about that. But before we dive into Barca and next weekend's game at Almeria, we have to talk about the big story that broke yesterday, has carried through into today. And of course, I'm talking about Joao Felix, who seems set to join Chelsea on a dry loan to the end of the season. Ooh, Sam, a couple directions we can go in with this. Where do you want to start? What's your reaction to the news that Joao is going to go join Chelsea?
Where do you start? I mean, there's so many different angles. There's so many different conversations about this whole move. I mean, one, is it the right move to let him go? Two, is it the right deal? Three, is it the right place for him to kick on with his career? Four, what does it mean long term? Is he coming back? Is he not? I mean, just so much talk and controversy, and everybody seems to have such strong opinions. And all about a player who has played 90 minutes once this season, who I don't think has been in the three best players of Atletico for more than a 5-10 game spell at any point since he joined the club. And I mean, his performances on the pitch have been a bit meh. I mean, he's had his good moments. I'm not arguing that. I think he's a good player, but he's not Atletico's best player. This isn't a travesty that he's being allowed to leave the club. So all this conversation because of the whole circus that surrounds João Felix, because he was the 126 million euro 19-year-old that Atletico signed to replace Antoine Griezmann. But I mean, I think it says it all that he was signed to replace Antoine Griezmann, and now here he is heading out to Chelsea on loan, and he is being replaced by Antoine Griezmann.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that kind of says it all about his spell at Atleti.
Yeah, and I hadn't realized, but I think you're right. I hadn't realized he'd played only 90 minutes once this season. Jeez. But yeah, that's true, because he had that string of appearances off the bench, a couple of games in that period, October, November, he didn't play at all. I think it's a sad end to a pretty sad saga overall. The deal itself, a dry loan, no option or obligation to buy. Chelsea are covering his wages. Reports have said Atletico are going to accept a package that in total around 16, 17 million euro. That includes an 11 million euro loan fee, and Chelsea will be covering his gross wages of around 6 million euro. Is it the right deal to let him go without an option or obligation attached to his name?
Well, I think the only people who really know the answer to that are the people in the powers that be at Atletico Madrid. I mean, there's so many different interpretations. I mean, one angle that is important to remember as well is the talk that his contract will be extended for another 2 years when he does get out on loan. And that obviously has sparked lots of speculation about what that means. Does that mean that Diego Simeone is leaving at the end of the season and the next coach wants João Felix to be an important part of his system? I'd be surprised if that's the case. I think it's more to do with the La Liga financial fair play and the amortization which the longer his contract is, the more spread out his transfer fee will be. I think it's more to do with that. I think it's a risk from Atletico, and with João Felix, everything seems to be a risk. But
right.
I mean, you know, if he goes to Chelsea and doesn't really settle, doesn't stand out, then you're not going to have Arsenal, Manchester United coming after him in the summer. And if that's the case, then his transfer value plummets even more. So then you're thinking, why didn't you put in the option to buy, that obligation to buy in that loan deal with Chelsea? Whereas on the other hand, he could go and have a great time at Chelsea, revive them, push them up the table, and suddenly his transfer value is back where Atletico would like it to be, and there will be clubs who are offering 100 and 120 million euros for it. So it's a gamble, I think. It's a gamble that perhaps I would have been reluctant to take, but at the same time, when we look at the very short-term nature of this deal, is this deal a good deal? 11 million euros to lose a player who hasn't been a regular starter for your team for 6 months, and to have his wages paid in full, I think financially it makes sense for Atletico.
Yeah, it's hard to say who really gets the best part of this deal, right? He's not exactly the player that Chelsea need. Chelsea are currently 10th in the Premier League. They are really struggling for form and fitness under Graham Potter, the new coach, spearheading this new project under new ownership. And João isn't really the kind of profile that they probably need. If they're looking for an out-and-out goal scorer to lead their line, that's really not João's game. But what is João's best role? I mean, I was thinking about this over the weekend while writing about it and watching and reading more about this game, is that we don't really know what his best position is. He's been in Madrid for 3.5 years, Sam. Like, Simeone has tried to play him as a 7, that hasn't worked. He's tried to play him as a 9, it hasn't worked. He's tried to play him as a 10, it doesn't work. So I wonder what Chelsea are really hoping to get out of this, because you and I have been watching this guy for 3.5 years, and we just haven't seen it, as you said, for more than 5 or 10 games at a time. He's not big enough or strong enough to be a center forward. There isn't really a place for a number 10 in the modern game anymore. You need your playmakers to be a lot more dynamic and versatile. He doesn't have the pace to be a 7, to be a winger, and he doesn't have the positional awareness to be a number 8.
Exactly. I mean, that's basically everywhere, right? I mean,
yeah. I just stole your thunder.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's been so strange about this whole thing, is that we've heard a lot about how his relationship with Diego Simeone is completely broken and terrible, and they can't stand each other. But I mean, if I was João Felix, I think João Felix, how he best stands out, how he best shines, is when a whole team revolves around him. And Atletico, he was never going to have that. I don't think he's had that at any point, because Atletico aren't that kind of club, that kind of team. Diego Simeone doesn't set up a system around one player. It's very much about the team and the collective.
Mm-hmm.
I think João Felix shines when it's like he was at Benfica, where they saw this great talent and thought, let's all work around João Felix, let's play to his strengths. He doesn't need to do the defensive duties quite so much. We'll cover him and we'll let him kind of dictate it. And obviously, if you head out on a six-month loan anywhere with no obligation to buy, no team in the world is going to do that for you. I mean, unless he goes to, you know, a West Ham or a Fulham, and kind of a mid-table, bottom half Premier League club that would be willing to take that gamble. But I mean, a team like Chelsea is never going to do that. And so for him, you wonder, is it misplaced belief in his own abilities? Is it belief in his own abilities? Maybe he's going to prove us all wrong. I mean, I think the system that Chelsea use is bizarrely similar to Atletico in some ways, that it's hard to see what he's thinking that is going to spark this huge change, that everything's going to be completely different in London, and that he's suddenly going to show what he's capable of. It's a strange one. It reminds me a little bit of Saul when he moved on loan to Chelsea, and you're thinking, wait, but why is Saul going to Chelsea when they've got 4 or 5 brilliant central midfielders? He's going to end up doing the same thing, playing left wing back or whatever it is for them. And that's exactly what happened. He came back to Atletico, kind of having assumed reality and saying, look, yeah, okay, I'll sit on the bench, I'll play wherever you tell me to play Diego Simeone. And I'm struggling to imagine João Felix having that same reaction. So it's going to be an interesting few months, but it's really kind of a real test for me at the moment to imagine how this all works out and ends up being a win-win for everyone. I think it could be a struggle.
Yeah, they already have guys like him, like Kai Havertz, Raheem Sterling, Hakim Ziyech, Christian Pulisic. like Chelsea, like, and like the Saul deal last year, you had, you know, Kovacic, Jorginho, and N'Golo Kante in that midfield. So naturally, Saul was, he comes in, he's already fourth choice. Joao Felix goes to Chelsea, he's not necessarily guaranteed a starting place right away, or maybe he is. It's a 6-month loan, you want to maximize it, so maybe he does just go right into that team that does need goal scoring, does need to find form very quickly to qualify for Europe next year, let alone the Champions League. It really is a strange one, and it's befitting the player that he is. It's befitting the transfer itself from Benfica. You know, here's Atletico spending 126 million euro on one player. They never ever done that before, could never even dream of that for the longest time since the football's economy exploded in the early 2000s. But yeah, earlier you mentioned that they're going to extend his contract by a year, and I agree. I do think that is more to do with financial regulations and staying in line with the very strict financial requirements La Liga puts in place for its clubs. Atletico have done this multiple times just since the summer, talking with players about extending their contracts by an additional couple of years. It gives the player more long-term security, and Atletico save more money in the short term. Of course, standard for this board, Sam, is that they're just kicking the can further down the road in another 3 or 4 years' time when they might have, by that point, sold the club. So it's not very good medium to long-term planning, but we're used to that from Atletico.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it before. We've seen it with several players. I mean, Thomas Lamar was one of them in the summer that reportedly took that pay cut, basically spreading out 1 or 2 years' wages over 4 years.
Yep.
To kind of help out financially. And I think that's definitely the approach here. And I mean, it is interesting. It's also interesting seeing the names that are being linked with all the talk, obviously, then turns to, okay, if you lose Joao Felix, who are you going to bring in? Because we've lost Mateus Cunha, we've lost Joao Felix. I mean, are we just going to stay with three strikers, with Morata, Griezmann and Nangel Correa, or what's the plan there? And I mean, some of the names that have come up obviously have been pretty depressing to look at in the list.
Well, it is funny that you mentioned that list, Sam, because we did have some reporting on that this morning with respect to a potential Joao Felix replacement. Atletico elected not to sign a direct replacement for Mateus Cunha, which I understood to a degree. They shouldn't have been carrying five forwards last year, and they shouldn't have been carrying five forwards this year. It's too many. It unbalances the squad. It was the big reason why Simeone elected to convert Antoine Griezmann into a number eight, into an interior midfielder. But Memphis Depay seems to be the top choice for Atletico, Sam. Apparently, the two clubs are already in discussions about Memphis. An initial loan, which is a bit weird because his contract is up over the summer. So I guess Barca would extend his contract to send him on loan and then work to sell him to Atletico. Some of the other names include Lucas Boye from Elche, Chimi Ávila from Osasuna, Andre Silva from Leipzig, Vitinha from Braga, and of course Borja Iglesias from Real Betis. Would Memphis be an ideal replacement for Joao?
I mean, are any of those players an ideal replacement? I mean,
yeah.
The thing is that none of them are a replacement for Joao Felix, are they? I mean, I guess that kind of links into what we were saying, that Joao Felix doesn't really have a position. I mean,
yeah,
you're not replacing Joao Felix with a like for like. But equally, I mean, you look at those list of names and none of them get you excited as an Atleti fan, do they? I mean, they're all a bit like, oh, great, yeah, he's been good for Elche, he's been good for Osasuna, but that's not kind of the level that as an Atleti fan you want your club to be looking at.
I think it's
a little bit kind of going back a few years almost to another era of Atletico Madrid, which, I mean, who knows, maybe that's the way that Atletico should go. I mean, how many of the big money signings have Atletico made that haven't worked? I mean, maybe it is worth having kind of some of these lower stakes signings that could be a better option. And with Memphis, I think with Barcelona last season, he was pretty good when he had the chance. This season, obviously, hasn't had much of a look in. But I mean, again, I think you have to wonder kind of how does he fit into this team? What is the planning? I mean, Griezmann, Morata, Memphis, they're three pretty different forwards. I mean, how do you rotate those? Are you using them for different scenarios? I mean, it all just seems a little bit like there's not too much forward planning or thought going into it. And I think from what we can tell from that list of players who have been linked is that it does seem to be that we want more of a strong target man, number nine, a bit like Alvaro Morata could be at times. that kind of player, but then, I mean, do any of those players fulfill that role, and are any of those players' clubs going to allow them to leave? I mean, Borja Iglesias, for example, at Betis, I mean, I think he's a little bit old to be trying to make that move now, but for Betis, this is a season when they could break into the top four in direct competition with Atleti. Why would they sell their star striker to Atletico for anything other than stupid money? And then Elche fighting against relegation, maybe they'll try and cash in before they get relegated at the end of the season. But I mean, we Atleti taking a forward off a team who are bottom of the league, and a forward who hasn't particularly matched his performances of last season this year. So I mean, yeah, I mean, none of them are particularly exciting. None of them you look at and think, yeah, that's what Atleti need. And maybe Memphis is the best of the bunch, but equally, he's a player who's barely featured this season. You have to wonder as well, coming into the Atleti team halfway through the season, just how fit he would be, how much time he would need to get in shape. And then when you're talking at the halfway point of the season, I mean, when is he going to be in the best shape to shine and bring something new to Atleti? So I think there's a lot of question marks that come up now. I think Atleti do need another forward, but none of the names that have been linked particularly excite me, although I couldn't tell you who would excite me. I mean, Atleti's finances are limited.
Yeah.
We have to face up to that reality, and these players, maybe this is just the reality of where we are, a team who aren't in the knockout rounds of European football, who are facing a big fight to qualify for the Champions League next season. And these are the players that maybe we would expect a Real Sociedad or a Real Betis to go after. And that's more where Atleti are at this point in time.
I think that's pretty fair to say. I think that's pretty fair analysis of... And the financial hole, in so much as it is a hole, it's grown because of the European eliminations and the still recovering from the revenue hit from the pandemic. And yeah, these are among the reasons why Atletico are looking at quote-unquote low-cost options, such as Memphis, who probably is the best of this bunch. I mean, Memphis has a pretty good track record. I mean, other than Man United, this is a guy who was a star, absolute star at Lyon, has huge international experience with the Netherlands, still could be considered in his prime at 28, going on 29 this year. But something else I noticed, Sam, is that these are all older forwards in their mid to late 20s. It's still in their prime or kind of emerging from their prime. Borja Iglesias, I think, would probably be among the worst options to sign from that list, given he's 29 going on 30, given Betis would ask a boatload for him, at least 40 million euro, and you factor in what the player's contract would be, and that's a 60 million euro package for Borja Iglesias. That is ridiculous, and Atletico should not do it. Memphis, as kind of this low-cost, cheap option, makes sense. Of course, as we know, Sam, Atletico do have quite a good track record of taking Barca's out of favor forwards and making them a key part of the team. See David Villa, see Luis Suarez. Maybe we can repeat the trick for a third time with Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. And maybe these players are a little bit more like Raul Garcia, that Adrian Lopez, that model of forward. And I think there is something in that, that when you bring a talented teenager like Jao, maybe they bring an ego or a personality that they're a star or whatever that may be. And with these kind of signings, you're bringing a player who knows this is probably their one shot to play at this level. They're going to give their all, and maybe that feeds in more to the cholismo, the collective and the hard work. I think there's one moment in the game against Barcelona where it's when there was a change in attack and Antoine Griezmann kind of pointed to Joao to drop into the kind of the wing back role when Carrasco was coming off, and Joao Felix just kind of looked at him and shaked his head, and then it was Griezmann who went over to the left. And it's just like, I mean, I was struggling to imagine a player like Tumi Avila or Lucas Boye doing that same thing. Maybe that's what this is from Atletico. Maybe actually what this whole scenario could teach is that Atletico are going to stick with Diego Simeone. They are going to invest their faith in that system, and they want to make a signing who will fit more into that kind of model. And looking back over the years, I think these players do kind of match that more, like Kevin Gamero, that... Mario Mandzukic, kind of that kind of model of forward who could come in and match with Atleti and with what Diego Simeone is looking for.
I saw a list last night of Atletico's 10 most expensive signings, and it's amazing that 90% of them just did not work or even failed miserably. Like, Radamel Falcao is the only one on this list, Sam, who really was a success, and he was only here for 2 years, right? You have Joao Felix, Tomo Lemar, Diego Costa the second time, Vitolo, who is probably the most ruinous signing in the club's history, Rodrigo De Paul, who is on his way to becoming one of the most ruinous signings in the club's history, Morata, Jackson Martinez, oh God, Gamero, who I was a fan of, but just didn't quite happen for him. He wasn't Simeone's first choice. We all knew that. And then you end with Mateus Cunha. And these are all signings worth 30 million euro or more. And all of them, almost all of them, during the Simeone era. It's really wild how spending more money does not necessarily guarantee success. And where Atletico have had the most success under Simeone is with these kind of bargain bin signings, right? These players who have something to prove, a chip on their shoulders. It's us against the world. That's where Simeone is in his element, right? That's where his man management skills really take over and really become prominent, is when he challenges these players and makes them prove themselves. See the league winning season in 2014, which we have not seen an accomplishment like that since. Even the league title a couple of years ago was in a very different league, a very different Atletico, a very different Madrid, a very different Barcelona from what there was in 2013-14. You mentioned earlier the possibility that the contract extension for Joao is being interpreted as Simeone basically saying, yeah, I'm out at the end of the season. Do you think that's a possibility? Is it a remote? Is it likely?
No, I think it seems pretty remote. I think with Diego Simeone, I think one day, obviously, he will leave, but I'm not sure that now is that time. I think that, I don't know, maybe it's the emotions taking over and the heart speaking more than head, but I like to imagine that Diego Simeone will, when he leaves Atletico, it will be more on a high than kind of this Arsene Wenger style, being at the club too long and it's all gone wrong and everybody wants him out. I think that now perhaps we're seeing criticism of Diego Simeone from 50% maybe of the fan base for the first time, but that's because he's been in charge for 11 years now, and up to now there's never been much of a reason to criticise him beyond the odd result or the odd couple of games. This is the first time over a prolonged period, so maybe Diego Simeone is not getting it right, but I think he will still, I don't see him with any desire to leave in particular. I mean, obviously he's well paid enough, and I think he wants to go to Italy perhaps. Maybe the timing isn't quite right for that. And also because for the board, he's a very useful figure to have. I mean, we all know that this board isn't the most popular board in the history of world football, to put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And Diego Simeone is kind of a figurehead and a shield for them, who will take the criticism for them. It's useful to have Diego Simeone there because people will blame him. If Diego Simeone leaves and they hire a new coach, they will ultimately be responsible for whatever that new coach does. If he doesn't work out and he's sacked 6 months later, that is Enrique Cerezo and Miguel Angel Gilmarín's fault, not Diego Simeone's fault, not the coach's fault.
Yep.
And so I think they're quite happy for the focus to stay on Diego Simeone. I don't think they'll force him out. I don't think Diego Simeone is desperate to leave either. So I think it's almost a little bit of a stalemate, and you just have to hope that it can get back to being good again, which I believe that it will. I think Diego Simeone is a very talented coach who can do that. I just think that maybe in a way almost missing out on the top four would help Atletico to kind of start from scratch and say, okay, we need to completely revamp the squad and bring in players who will work for Diego Simeone team. Maybe that is what's needed, because I think over the last couple of years we've seen Diego Simeone kind of lose that ethos. It hasn't looked like a Diego Simeone team. It doesn't match his philosophy, his way of looking at football. So maybe that's what Atletico kind of need. It could be a blessing in disguise, even if it would mean financial disaster for the club in the very short term.
Yeah, the last 18 months have been tough for everyone, certainly Simeone, who like us, he feels this club on a molecular level. And he does have a contract for another year, and he won't be sacked. His stature and his position at the club is such that he will leave whenever he wants. And really, he's the type of animal, Sam, that if they miss out on Champions League, which is a distinct possibility this year, he probably will extend his contract, because the criticism for the board will be very sharp if they, it already is, it has been for years, because this board is, this club is not run well, hasn't been in a long, long time. It predates Simeone and will probably live on after he leaves. But Simeone is the type who relishes
a fairy tale situation, like you said. I can imagine Diego Simeone saying, "Look, we missed out on the top four because of that's my responsibility." He's never held back in that,
mm-hmm.
and saying, "Look, I will extend my contract. I'll take a pay cut to reflect the financial reality and kind of show his commitment once more to the club," which would be very Diego Simeone. That's my fairy tale way of envisaging that nightmare scenario.
Yeah, and I think there's a decent chance that happens. Alternatively, he has never been under this much pressure as Atletico boss, and maybe it is weighing on him. Don't know. We'll have to wait until the end of the season. And whether Atletico are in the top four at season's end is very much up for debate and is up for discussion as we turn our attention to the Barca game on Sunday. Sam, you were at this game. You were in the South Stand. Talk to me about what you saw and what you feel, having had a couple of days to reflect on it.
I mean, it was such a weird game. I mean, I feel like Atletico were the better team over the 90 minutes. I feel like if you don't see the goal, you just see kind of the stats, or you just see some of the clips of the highlights, and somebody says, which team won 1-0? You'd say, all right, that's Atletico. But Barcelona, just to that 15-20-minute spell where they were the better team, and then Atleti were all over them, but it's the same problem we've seen so many times with Atleti, where Atleti have plenty of the domination, the chances, and just couldn't find a way through. I mean, the Barcelona defensive performance was very good. It was almost akin to Diego Simeone teams of years gone by, of grinding out a result by just having a good 15-20-minute spell and then sitting back and defending for the rest of it. But I think for Atleti, it was good. I mean, it's hard to take too much criticism from that game. I think there are a lot of individual mistakes. I think the first time ever, as the biggest Reinildo fan in the world, I can say that Reinildo had a bad game.
Mm.
And just too many kind of slip-ups and misplaced passes in the defensive third that was what eventually ended up costing Atleti. And I think it's hard to put too much criticism on the midfield or the attack, because I think against most teams, other than this Barcelona team or Real Madrid or a very strong European team, Atleti would get something from this game. And I mean, you know, if fate was slightly different, that Antoine Griezmann chance in injury time, which Ronaldo Araujo cleared off the line, I was out of my seat in another reality that's just about crossed over the line.
Oh.
And we're here talking about how Atleti have taken a very solid home draw against league leaders Barcelona. So slim margins, but I mean, yeah, it's a weird game to analyze and to try and take something from.
Jan Oblak said after the game, "We did everything but score." And he was right. After the opening 20 minutes, which we'll talk about in just a sec, Atletico were vastly superior, I think, to Barca. Xavi, it still kind of surprises me, even though Xavi has been back for, you know, a year and a half now. It surprises me a little bit at just how defensive he can be and how pragmatic his Barca side has been over the past season plus, almost two seasons. He made several defensive substitutions after the hour. Barca were burrowing for a large portion of this game. Atleti had them under serious pressure in the second half. I mean, I can count on one hand the number of times in meetings with Barca over the years under Simeone, how many times we have been superior to them. And Atletico were definitely superior to Barca on Sunday. But you wrote in your three things, Sam, about Atletico's defense, how Atletico are like a house. The problem is that while they've taken care to decorate the living room, tool up the kitchen, even put in a nice guest room, the foundations are built on ice cream. And you mentioned these defensive foundations a moment ago. Reinildo had a rough game on Sunday. Stefan Savic got sent off in the 92nd minute. Jose Jimenez had, I thought, a terrible game. A lot of nerves, a lot of jitters. He, too, is facing a very long suspension, courtesy of FIFA, for his actions at the World Cup. So what did you make of those first 20-25 minutes where Atletico sat back and burrowed and tried to hit Barca on the counter, and it really didn't work? What did you make of the approach to start the game?
I think it was just a bit of a disaster. I think the first 5 minutes or so, Barcelona were a little bit nervy, a little bit cautious as well, and so you didn't see too much of it. But then Atletico just I mean, it was almost Atletico of a few years ago where they would rely on defensive foundations, defensive solidity. But with this defence, they just don't have it. I mean, you can't rely on that back three to string together five passes and resist the press and then play it out to the midfield or go long. And I think that was a big part of the problem, particularly against Barcelona in that first 20 minutes or so, was that Barcelona would then press and Atleti would look to go long, but there was no target man in the attack. I mean, João Felix wasn't going to be winning headers up against Raúl Araújo. Antoine Griezmann wasn't going to be doing it against Andreas Christensen. So there was no outlet for Atleti to aim for. And without that, I think that made the defence even more nervous. There were more misplaced passes. And I think it's a defence which is completely shot for confidence. I mean, Jan Oblak's interview after the game was very strange and almost tough viewing in a way, because when you think he said, "I'm so sorry" at one point,
yeah,
it was like, this is a little bit strange. He said it like, "I think it's a mental problem. I can't explain it. If I could, we wouldn't be doing it anymore." And you just think it's in the head of these players that there is that kind of uncertainty, insecurity that I think has almost been a little bit of an issue that has been hanging around a little bit, basically ever since Diego Godin left. And I don't think we've had that leader in defence. I mean, you can look at Stefan Savic as the older veteran in defence, but I mean, a leader in defence isn't wrestling on the halfway line going into injury time. José Mar Jiménez has been around for a very long time, but I think he's another player who loses his head when he gets too angry. I mean, which is exactly why he's facing that suspension from the World Cup.
Yep.
And Ronaldo has been at the club for around a year, and I don't think he's that kind of character. And Atletico desperately need that kind of leader, particularly in defence, just to calm things down and bring things together. And I think that's what was so desperately missing against Barcelona, ignoring the fact there was no outlet or target man to aim for, but the fact that there was somebody to kind of calm those nerves. I think it was just too jittery and too prone to mistakes. And then you look at the bench and you see Mario Hermoso and Felipe, and you remember that things could be even worse.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Hermoso is ineligible for Sunday's game, although maybe that is a blessing in disguise. But Hermoso should be back for the Almeria game on Sunday. Savage won't be there after, as you mentioned, he got into a bit of a scrap with Ferran Torres around the halfway line in stoppage time. Just kind of inexplicable how that happened. Fun for you, like, just, you know, independent of anything else, in a vacuum, it was fun to watch, but it really hurts Atletico. It seems like a group of players at the back, Sam, that are just terrified of conceding, because they know if they give up one goal, Atletico are probably not going to win, given how wasteful they have been in attack for a large portion of this season. Nahuel Molina had a pretty good game, though, on Sunday, and that has to be encouraging. Molina has come in for a lot of criticism in his first few months at Atletico, but you wrote in your Three Things piece as well, Sam, that this was one of his best performances yet. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I thought so. I think that the system has put up with a lot of focus put on his side of the pitch with Marcos Llorente. And I mean, we're just going to talk about Nahuel Molina, but for me, one of the best players over the last few weeks since the World Cup has been Marcos Llorente.
Yeah.
I think he's possibly, even over a period of a couple of games, the best I've seen him since that league-winning season. I think he dropped off, and now I think this is, it's more like the Marcos Llorente that everybody fell in love with. And he was kind of tracking back, which helped Molina out defensively, because he was no longer that exposed in the wing-back role. I think with Nahuel Molina, there was a great phrase that some Spanish guys I was talking to about it after the game. And when I said, I thought he was excellent, there's just one problem with him, and that is that his right foot is like a brick. And he just his deliveries aren't great, but if he could cross a little bit better, if he had a Kieran Trippier crossing ability, he would be a world-beating right back. And he's a World Cup winner. He looked that little bit more confident, that little bit more assured. And also linking back to what we were just talking about, you wonder about, maybe is it part of it playing in front of the Atleti fans, playing at the Metropolitana, that doesn't help these players who maybe are struggling with the pressure, the nerves. And I feel like that was part of Molina's issue early on in the season, was that, I mean, obviously his home debut was that game against Villarreal where he got sent off. Doesn't exactly endear you to the fans to be sent off in a home defeat in your first game. but he'd never really settled entirely. And I think in this game, he looked a little bit more at home, a little bit more confident. And I think you saw that in that he would bomb on down the flanks a little bit more and try and put crosses in, which we haven't seen so much of because he looked a little bit hesitant to do that in the past. So hopefully this is a sign of brighter things to come. And if him and Llorente can kind of build that link down the right flank, I don't think it's similar in any way at all to the Llorente-Trippier link, but it's another one that does have promising signs and maybe could be the best solution to get the best out of both of those players.
Molina even had a couple sights of goal on Sunday. This is a player who scored, I think, 7 times for Udinese last year. So he's clearly got the attacking vision, the final third vision. His crossing is still not good enough. I think he only completed 2 out of 8 crosses on Sunday, and that's better than we've been used to seeing from him. But, you know, onward and upward, and for Molina especially, who is really the only option, the only viable option in this position, because Llorente is not a natural right back or right wing back. The club kind of just threw Molina in there without a life vest and said, good luck, sink or swim, after the Trippier sale and after Daniel Voss left at the end of the summer. Basically, Molina is it. So I think you're right. We do have to be patient with him. He is a World Cup winning right back, a starting right back for Argentina. He's clearly not a bum. He's clearly pretty talented. We just got to have patience with him and understand that, again, it's poor planning to just throw Molina in there and tell him to sink or swim and expect instant results. Like, I think that's just, I know some others may say that's realistic. We should expect these handsomely paid players to produce immediately, but it's just not always the case. And Molina is an example of, you know, let's just be patient and see what we've got here and not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, he's a 24-year-old guy who's obviously very young still in his career. I mean, he plays in Argentina, he's played in Italy, and now he's in Spain. I mean, this is a guy who does have a pretty impressive track record, but not all that experience. And he's in this new system. He hasn't always played as a wing-back like in this Atletico system. He does have more defensive duties perhaps here at Leti than he had at Udinese. But I mean, he does have that attacking talent. I mean, that goal he scored for Argentina in the World Cup against the Netherlands, which was, I mean, better finishing, better movement than we've seen from Atleti strikers at some points this season.
No kidding.
I mean, he does have that potential. So, I mean, nice what I wrote about him in the summer when he was linked to Atletico and so on. I feel like it's the right signing, but almost a little bit of the right signing, the wrong timing. That you think he could definitely come good, but you'd also like to have almost a Vasalico kind of figure, that little bit more assured, experienced player who knows exactly what that role requires of him to take the flak in some of the more pressured games and allow Molina to kind of settle in. Unfortunately, the awful squad management means that Molina doesn't have that. He's thrown at the deep end and he's arrived and kind of been told, right, now, Molina, you're going to be our starting right-back, right-wing-back for 38 games this season. Get on with it.
Yeah.
And so I certainly don't envy him, but I think maybe this and the World Cup could give him a platform to kickstart his season.
Absolutely. You have attended more games at the Metropolitano this season than I have, Sam. What have you made of the atmosphere at home games this year? Atletico have already lost 3 times in the league at the Metropolitano, and that is really wild. Atletico are usually very, very strong at home, and they were not. They have not been this season. Losses to Villarreal, Real Madrid, and now Barcelona at the Metropolitano, and no home wins and only 1 home win in the group stage of the Champions League as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be reluctant to use the word toxic, which I know that some people have used around the atmosphere. But I mean, that was one of the things that surprised me against Barcelona. Is usually for these big games, fans are very up for it, kind of let's get at them, even if we don't necessarily have that much to play for. Let's get at them, let's beat them, let's beat the big boys, Barcelona, and so on. And this time there just seemed to be a little bit of resignation, especially when Barcelona scored that goal. It wasn't a come on, we'll get back into this. It was a, well, all right, again.
Yeah.
We've seen this before. I think it's a culmination of 1-2 years of seeing the same thing, of seeing the same mistakes, the same errors, the same issues with the squad, and nothing being done about it. I think there is a disconnection, especially at the moment, between the squad and the fans, and the fans don't see themselves in these kinds of players. I mean, when you look back and mentioned him earlier on, Raul Garcia is a fan favourite because fans love to see him because he's the kind of player who would give his all. put his body on the line. And as a fan in the stands, you could say, that would be me if I was on that pitch. Not the most talented, but I'll give my all. Mm-hmm. When that then contrasts to, you know, a Yannick Carrasco or Rodrigo de Paul, who isn't prepared to do that kind of thing at all, then it's more difficult. And it's one thing that's come up today in the news with the talk of a potential referendum on the club quest and
yes.
I mean, this fan engagement committee, I can't remember the proper official name for it, is going to vote on whether a referendum should be held with the Socios and whether we should revert to the old quest or stay with the new one. And it just feels like, as much as this is a very interesting debate, which we could talk about for hours and go into it, it does almost feel a little bit like, why do they need to feel the need to divide the fan base even more at this point in time? I think there's already enough division, enough people saying Cholo out or backing Cholo to the death, enough people saying João Félix is the future and enough saying no, he's not good enough. We don't need another big topic to throw onto the table and divide the fan base even more. And so it's all very strange timing, and I just feel like at the moment fans going to the Metropolitano are a little bit going through the motions and not expecting that much. I mean, Barcelona was always going to be a tough game. I think it'll be more interesting perhaps in the next few home games to see how the fans react. I mean, obviously the next two, I think, Valladolid and then Getafe. I mean, Saturday afternoon, evening in January, February against Valladolid and Getafe, you're not going to get the biggest crowds. It will be interesting to see how the fans in the stands react to those, especially if at any point in the game the result isn't quite going our way.
I was going to ask you, actually, your thoughts on this report carried in Mundo Deportivo today about the meeting Wednesday centered on potentially returning to the old Shield. Atletico, for those of you who don't know, changed their logo, God, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And the current badge is not particularly popular with very large portions of the fan base. I think more people have been accepting of it in recent years, but it's still pretty clearly a very unpopular look with some of the older guard, the hardcore Socios and supporters. Should Atletico go back to the old badge, Sam? What do you think?
In my personal take on it is, I mean, if I had to choose, you gave me both options, I'd say the old badge. I think it reflects the club's history. I mean, there's so many elements of it that were removed. Stupid things like turning around the bear and the tree, which is like, why are you changing that? There's no need for that. It doesn't help anything. The colours and so on that I think are more linked to Atletico, to its history, to everything. But at the same time, you look at this and you say, look, Atletico changed the emblem, the badge, to build for the future, the move to the Metropolitano to be a more modern club and so on. What doesn't make any sense for me is for the club to open up this debate and say, look, we're happy to do either. I think if the club were going to go with a new crest, they should go with it, stick with it, and say, we're not going to go back. But the fact that they're opening up this debate just seems a bit weird to me. If you're up to me, I'd choose the old badge. I think so many fans are in that same boat. I mean, Atletico recently opened up an area of the club store where it was selling kind of memorabilia and old shirts and kits with the old badge on, and things sell out in no time when they put on the 75th anniversary kit last season. It sold out, I think, within an hour. There were queues outside the store, and that's only been seen with that shirt with the old crest on it. And so there's definitely the demand from the fans there. I'm not sure if it will happen because of the politics in that fan committee, some members who are going to be very against holding a referendum. But I think if it does get put to a referendum of the Socios, I think we'll end up going back that way.
Yep, I agree.
And then for the club, you have to think, what does that mean? How do they now envisage their future? How do they, I mean, even just the expense of it, I mean, of changing logos everywhere at the Metropolitano and all of everything, I mean, that's an expensive process. So I'm pretty surprised that the club are doing that, wondering what they're trying to take attention off elsewhere by bringing this up. But I guess we'll see, right? I mean, the vote on Wednesday is a bit 50-50.
I mean, the timing is very weird, and it's another mess that the club doesn't really need to be making right now, but they seem intent on doing it anyway. I mean, and for what it's worth, when I was at the team store back in October when I was in Madrid, I only bought stuff with the like the old logo on it. I had bought this mock-up of the Calderon, like this gold-colored mock-up of the Calderon that's like sitting on my kitchen table. So that kind of gives you an idea of where I am on this whole debate. Like I'm okay with the newer badge. It's fine. It's definitely a more modern look, but there's no beating the old badge. Like that's Atletico's history right there. And you know it. The change in the badge came at the same time as they left the Calderon for the Metropolitano, and that hit a nerve with a lot of people. Some very raw emotions about, you know, uprooting the club from this historic home on the Manzanares and moving. Basically, there's nothing else up there other than the Metropolitano. There's nothing. It's just the stadium, at least for the time being. That's all that's up there, up near the airport, in what has historically been considered Real Madrid territory. So, yeah, just another potential mess, marketing mess that the club is putting itself in. I was going to talk about Yannick Carrasco, too, because you brought him up a few minutes ago. He's had a terrible season, Sam. One goal in 860 minutes. There have been rumors that Carrasco is on the metaphorical exit ramp for January. What should Atletico do with Carrasco? And by extension, a lot of the older players that are in this squad. Savage just turned 32 the other day. Koke just turned 31. Jan Oblak is 30. Griezmann is 31. Morata is 30. Gündoğan is about to turn 30. Carrasco is 29 and playing like he's in his mid-30s. What do Atletico do with Carrasco and some of these other older players? What can be done with them?
Carrasco is just such a strange case, isn't he? I mean, Carrasco is a typical player that I think when he wants to, he can be the best player Atletico have by some distance. But when he doesn't want to, if he's not fully on it, not fully committed, he's just a waste of space, to put it that harshly. I mean, he just doesn't contribute anything at all. And I think this season he's not interested. There's lots of talk of broken promises regarding a contract renewal, which were followed by reports that he'd been offered a 25% pay rise and turned it down. I think Atleti, if they're looking to move players on this summer, Yannick Carrasco is one of the few players that you can move on and make money out of. I think he has that potential. I think you have to look to cash in there because he's not consistent enough to justify keeping him, paying his wage. Some of the others you mentioned, I mean, Stefan Savic, I think you'd probably struggle to find a team willing to buy him at this point, given his recent injury record and disciplinary record. But perhaps now is also the time for him to move on. And then you're looking at players kind of the very spine of this Atleti team. Jan Oblak, Koke, Griezmann, I mean, that's the spine of the team. And that's a huge switch to get rid of so many of these players at once. I think obviously Koke will be at Atleti until he decides he doesn't want to be at Atleti anymore. I think he's still got some legs in him, but maybe now, particularly with the explosion of Pablo Barrios, we see him less regularly. We see him as a less important player. Griezmann is still showing that he's got it, and the peak of his powers almost getting back to that kind of form. And Jan Oblak has kind of stabilised because he went from being the best goalkeeper in the world, no question about it, to being one of Spain's worst goalkeepers for a few months. And now he's not quite back at the same heights, but he's not as bad as he was either. So
right,
all of these older players in particular, if there's a big offer from the Premier League or somewhere else, you wonder, would it be the right time to move them on? But I think Griezmann and Koke are the only two who definitely won't be going anywhere, because Diego Simeone loves Griezmann so much he wouldn't want to leave, and Koke loves Atleti so much that he wouldn't want to leave. And all of the others, I wouldn't be shocked if they're playing somewhere else next season. But Oblak I would like to keep, but at the same time I could see why he might want to leave and not be part of a new era for Atletico Madrid, which is what's going to start this summer, is a new era, a new squad, a new approach. And if the decision is that that's the perfect time for Oblak to move on, for somebody else to come in, then so be it, because they probably won't be earning as much in wages as Jan Oblak is. And that's the sad truth, especially if there's no Champions League football.
And you mentioned Barrios as well while you were answering that, and he just continues to impress me, Sam. This was the biggest stage yet for him against Barcelona. He got the vote of confidence from El Cholo, one of the biggest games of the year every year for Atletico. And I think he had a few nerves early on, and Pedri just kind of dribbled right through him and through Koke to set up the Dembélé goal midway through the first half. but he's got the look of a really solid young midfielder, Sam. Dribbling ability, good vision, good choice of pass, good touch on the ball. He's good, and he's confident, and he provides energy, a spark, something to try to break Atletico out of this 18-month-long stagnation.
Yeah, and Diego Simeone put his faith in him to give him that start. I mean, it's been a long time since Atletico had a young player break into the team and establish themselves. I mean, last season we had Javi Serrano come in a couple of times, but I think he only got one start against Granada on a Thursday night with a 6 o'clock kickoff or something like that. So very different to Pablo Barrios, who, I mean, has been thrown in to start against Elche, okay, but then to start against Barcelona in this kind of profile of a game and held his own. I think he probably will have felt a little bit critical of himself after that game, but he definitely held his own. He didn't look out of place. He didn't look like a 19-year-old making his, second start for the first team.
Yeah.
So I think you have to say, right, Diego Simeone really believes in him. And if Diego Simeone really believes in him like this, and we've seen these performances that we have seen in the Copa del Rey against lower tier sides, which is a little bit easier, but also against Elche, against Barcelona, then it will be interesting to see how he's brought into the fold with the first team in the next few months, and also who misses out as a consequence of that, because it could be Koke, who is most kind of impacted by that arrival, and Rodrigo de Paul. I mean, we have a World Cup winner on the bench while 19-year-old Pablo Barrios is starting. So I think there's a lot of expectation and pressure on him. I just hope too much of that pressure isn't put onto him and too much of that expectation is put onto him. But I mean, he seems to be a pretty mentally tough guy, a mentally strong guy with belief in his own abilities to have the bravery to go out and start against Barcelona and put in a performance like that.
Yeah, you really don't want to risk burning him out, especially if he's got a shot to be the first prospect since Thomas and Lucas, right, to really make it at Atletico, to become a first-team fixture at only 19 years old. You don't want to risk burning him out. But, you know, you can't argue that DePaul's been better than him, right? You can't argue that Koke, on the balance of the season, has been better than him. He offers something new. He offers something different. And we'll see if he gets another start this weekend, Sam, against Almeria. This will be Atletico's first meeting with Almeria since February of 2015. As the new boys just came up from Segunda. Atleti have not been good at home, as we talked about, but they have been quite good on their travels with 5 wins from 8 thus far in the league. How do we see this game going on Sunday against an Almeria side that lost Umar Sadiq to Real Sociedad but are still hanging around? They may end up staving off relegation. They currently sit 14th.
Yeah, they're a team that are hard to beat. They're not easy to break down, and I mean, I watched the game against Real Sociedad at the weekend as well, and it was very much that kind of sense of when Real Sociedad eventually broke through and got that first goal, the game changed completely, but they didn't do that until the second half. In that first half, it was very hard fought and very even. And Real Sociedad are a very good team, higher up in the table than Atleti this season. And I think it will be an interesting game, and also because if we forget the Barcelona game, then Atletico have been pretty good. I mean, convincing win over Elche, convincing win over Oviedo since the World Cup.
Yep.
And then you look at the fixture list of the games coming up. I mean, Levante and the Copa del Rey is a potential banana skin, but imagine that we win that one into the quarterfinals. Valladolid at home, Osasuna away, Getafe at home, Celta Vigo away. I mean, that's 5-6 games coming up that are winnable for Atleti. If Atleti can build up some form now, that will change the season entirely. I mean, just so much depends on that. I mean, there's no big tests in those next 6 games. And then there are a couple of few tougher games. I mean, Athletic, Real Madrid, Sevilla, the next 3 after that. So you really need to pick up points in this stage of the season so that you're not relying on it when we come to May, June, when we have kind of, you know, those very tough few games at the end of the season. I think last year, Real Sociedad and Villarreal, you don't want to be depending on picking up points there. So I think this stage of the season could be crucial in deciding whether Atleti end the season in the top 4 or not. And that has to start at Almeria, because not getting off to a good start there will inevitably have a knock-on effect against Levante, against Valladolid, against Osasuna, and not having that belief that Atleti are the better team and should be winning these games. And I think that's the statement Atleti need to make, is we are Atletico Madrid. We are one of Spain's biggest teams. And even if Almeria are tough to beat, we need to come and show you what we're capable of. And I think Atletico need to get a little bit of that swagger, that confidence back.
Yeah, because if they don't, they're not making the Champions League. If the season ended today, they wouldn't. They're 5 points behind La Real in third, a point behind Betis in fourth, level on points with Villarreal. Villarreal already have the head-to-head advantage. Just a point ahead of Athletic, 3 points ahead of Osasuna, 4 points ahead of Rayo Vallecano. It's tight, other than the first two, who are kind of in their own world at the top of the table. It's tight. You know, you have, six teams, seven teams separated by 9 points. So Atletico have some ground to make up here. And they don't meet La Real head-to-head until very late in the season. They already have, at least for now, the head-to-head over Betis, the head-to-head over Athletic, which really could come in handy in the latter stages of the campaign. So you're right, it does have to start this weekend against Almeria away. And then the cup game next week, which is pretty clear at this point that the cup is Atletico's only real shot at silverware this year. Simeone's taking it very seriously, naming very strong sides in each game so far against lower-tier opposition. When was the last time that they won three Copa del Rey games in a single campaign? I was thinking about this like yesterday and I couldn't remember.
Struggled to think of either.
Yeah.
More than once. Okay. In the Copa del Rey in a season. I think I did look it up the other day. I'm going to have to try and see if I can find the stat. But yeah, it does feel like a long time since we had a cup run. I think it might even have been, was it 2014? Let me see if I can find it here in front of me now. The last time Atleti made it to the quarterfinals was 2018.
Yep.
2017, 2018. So, I mean, that long ago, I mean, this would be, if they failed to do it this year, that would be five seasons in a row going out in the earlier stages. It's not good for supposedly the third biggest team in the country.
Yeah, that's right. And so, of course, we get drawn against Levante, of course.
Of course, yeah. I was talking to some people before the game and saying before the draw, saying, I mean, who do you want Atleti to draw? And everybody's saying, look, I'd rather draw Real Madrid, Barcelona than draw Levante away, because we all know how that ends. And of course, Levante away was the draw that came out. And I mean, again, kind of talking about the confidence, the swagger, I mean, it's exactly what Atleti wouldn't really want, to go and play a team who are fighting for promotion at the right end of the table while they're faltering a little bit. So maybe it could be a tougher game than we think it would be on paper of first against second division.
Yeah, spoken like true Atleti fans, fearing a draw against Levante more than Madrid or Barca.
Exactly. It's not as embarrassing to lose to Real Madrid as it would be to lose to Levante.
That's very true. And yet, Atletico contrive ways to drop points against Levante more often than not. But hopefully that does not happen in the cup game next week, and hopefully they don't drop points against Almeria either. That would not be a very good look. But at any rate, we're going to leave it there for the time being. Sam, anything else you would like to tell the listeners before we sign off?
No, I think we just have to keep the faith with Diego Simeone and stick with El Cholo. And the fans are pretty clear with that. And the Metropolitano on Sunday night with the chance for Diego Simeone, and no matter how badly things go wrong or don't go entirely according to plan, he is the Atletico legend. We are watching Atletico Madrid history every single time that we watch Diego Simeone lead the team, so just have to believe in El Cholo, I guess.
You can find Sam on Twitter at Sam Leverage. You can read his work on Into the Calderon, as well as other places mentioned at the start of the show. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Barron, Into the Calderon, at Into the Calderon. Keep up with our work there. Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/ColchNeroChat. The Amigos get a special bonus programming from as little as $3 a month. We will be back at the weekend or early next week to discuss the Almeria game and preview Levante in the Copa del Rey. Until then, thanks again for listening. Adios.